Chapter 111. Beyond their reach, as a private soldier might register a vow never to accept the order of the garter, or a poor curate of great piety and learning, but of no family save a very large family of children might renounce a bishopric. Here was Nicholas Nickleby, who would have scorned the thought of counting how the chances stood of his rising in favor or fortune with the brothers Cheeryble, now that their nephew had returned, already deep in calculations, whether that same nephew was likely to rival him in the affections of the fair unknown, discussing the matter with himself too, as gravely as if, with that one exception, it were all settled, and recurring to the subject again and again, and feeling quite indignant and ill-used at the notion of anybody else making love to one with whom he had never exchanged a word in all his life. To be sure, he exaggerated rather than depreciated the merits of his new acquaintance, but still he took it as a kind of personal offense that he should have any merits at all in the eyes of this particular young lady, that is, for elsewhere he was quite welcome to have as many as he pleased. There was undoubted selfishness in all this, and yet Nicholas was of a most free and generous nature, with as few mean or sordid thoughts, perhaps, as ever fell to the lot of any man, and there is no reason to suppose that, being in love, he felt and thought differently from other people in the like sublime condition. He did not stop to set on foot an inquiry into his train of thought or state of feeling, however, but went thinking on all the way home, and continued to dream on in the same strain all night. For, having satisfied himself that Frank Cheeryble could have no knowledge of, or acquaintance with, the mysterious young lady, it began to occur to him that even he himself might never see her again. Upon which hypothesis he built up a very ingenious succession of tormenting ideas which answered his purpose even better than the vision of Mr. Frank Cheeryble, and tantalized and worried him, waking and sleeping. Notwithstanding all that has been said and sung to the contrary, there is no well-established case of morning having either deferred or hastened its approach by the term of an hour or so for the mere gratification of a splenetic feeling against some unoffending lover. The sun having, in the discharge of his public duty, as the books of precedent report, invariably risen according to the almanacs, and without suffering himself to be swayed by any private considerations. So, morning came as usual, and with it business hours, and with him Mr. Frank Cheeryble, and with him a long train of smiles, and welcomes from the worthy brothers, and a more grave and clerk-like, but scarcely less hearty reception from Mr. Timothy Linkinwater. That Mr. Frank and Mr. Nickleby should have met last night, apostrophe said Tim Linkinwater, getting slowly off his stool, and looking round the counting house with his back planted against the desk, as was his custom, when he had anything very particular to say. That those two young men should have met last night in that manner is, I say, a coincidence, a remarkable coincidence. Why, I don't believe now, apostrophe added Tim, taking off his spectacles, and smiling as with gentle pride, that there's such a place in all the world for coincidences as London is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know about that, apostrophe said Mr. Frank, but apostrophe, don't know about it, Mr. Francis. Apostrophe, apostrophe interrupted Tim, with an obstinate air. Well, but let us know. If there is any better place for such things, where is it? Is it in Europe? No, that it isn't. Is it in Asia? Why, of course it's not. Is it in Africa? Not a bit of it. Is it in America? You know better than that, at all events. Well then, apostrophe said Tim, folding his arms resolutely, where is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I was not about to dispute the point, Tim, apostrophe said young Cheeryble, laughing. I am not such a heretic as that. All I was going to say was, that I hold myself under an obligation to the coincidence, that's all. Apostrophe, oh, if you don't dispute it, apostrophe said Tim, quite satisfied, that's another thing. I'll tell you what though. I wish you had. I wish you or anybody would. I would so put that man down, apostrophe said Tim, tapping the forefinger of his left hand emphatically with his spectacles. So put that man down by argument, apostrophe. It was quite impossible to find language to express the degree of mental prostration to which such an adventurous wight would be reduced in the keen encounter with Tim Linkinwater. So Tim gave up the rest of his declaration in pure lack of words, and mounted his stool again. We may consider ourselves, Brother Ned, apostrophe said Charles, after he had patted Tim Linkinwater approvingly on the back, very fortunate in having two such young men about us as our nephew Frank and Mr. Nickleby. It should be a source of great satisfaction and pleasure to us. Apostrophe, certainly, Charles, certainly, apostrophe returned the other. Of Tim, apostrophe added Brother Ned, I say nothing whatever, because Tim is a mere child and infant, a nobody, that we never think of or take into account at all. Tim, you villain, what do you say to that, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am jealous of both of 'em, apostrophe said Tim, and mean to look out for another situation. So provide yourselves, gentlemen, if you please. Apostrophe, Tim thought this such an exquisite, unparalleled, and most extraordinary joke, that he laid his pen upon the inkstand, and rather tumbling off his stool than getting down with his usual deliberation, laughed till he was quite faint, shaking his head all the time, so that little particles of powder flew palpably about the office. Nor were the brothers at all behindhand, for they laughed almost as heartily at the ludicrous idea of any voluntary separation between themselves and old Tim. Nicholas and Mr. Frank laughed quite boisterously, perhaps to conceal some other emotion awakened by this little incident, and so, indeed, did the three old fellows after the first burst. So perhaps there was as much keen enjoyment and relish in that laugh, altogether, as the politest assembly ever derived from the most poignant witticism uttered at any one person's expense. Mr. Nickleby, apostrophe said Brother Charles, calling him aside, and taking him kindly by the hand, I am anxious, my dear sir, to see that you are properly and comfortably settled in the cottage. We cannot allow those who serve us well to labor under any privation or discomfort that it is in our power to remove. I wish to see your mother and sister, to know them, Mr. Nickleby, and have an opportunity of relieving their minds by assuring them that any trifling service we have been able to do them is a great deal more than repaid by the zeal and ardor you display. Not a word, my dear sir, I beg. Tomorrow is Sunday. I shall make bold to come out at tea time, and take the chance of finding you at home, if you are not, you know, or the ladies should feel a delicacy in being intruded on, and would rather not be known to me just now. Why, I can come again another time, any other time would do for me. Let it remain upon that understanding. Brother Ned, my dear fellow, let me have a word with you this way. Apostrophe, the twins went out of the office arm in arm, and Nicholas, who saw in this act of kindness, and many others of which he had been the subject that morning, only so many delicate renewals on the arrival of their nephew of the kind assurance which the brothers had given him in his absence, could scarcely feel sufficient admiration and gratitude for such extraordinary consideration. The intelligence that they were to have visitor, and such a visitor next day, awakened in the breast of Mrs. Nickleby mingled feelings of exultation and regret, for whereas on the one hand she hailed it as an omen of her speedy restoration to good society, and the almost forgotten pleasures of morning calls and evening tea drinkings, she could not, on the other, but reflect with bitterness of spirit on the absence of a silver teapot with an ivory knob on the lid, and a milk jug to match, which had been the pride of her heart in days of yore, and had been kept from year's end to year's end wrapped up in wash leather on a certain top shelf which now presented itself in lively colors to her sorrowing imagination. I wonder who's got that spice box, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, shaking her head. It used to stand in the left-hand corner, next but two to the pickled onions. You remember that spice box, Kate? Apostrophe, perfectly well, Mama. Apostrophe, I shouldn't think you did. 8, apostrophe returned Mrs. Nickleby, in a severe manner, talking about it in that cold and unfeeling way. If there is any one thing that vexes me in these losses more than the losses themselves, I do protest and declare, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, rubbing her nose with an impassioned air, that it is to have people about me who take things with such provoking calmness. Apostrophe, my dear mamma, apostrophe said Kate, stealing her arm round her mother's neck, why do you say what I know you cannot seriously mean or think, or why be angry with me for being happy and content? You and Nicholas are left to me, we are together once again, and what regard can I have for a few trifling things, of which we never feel the want? When I have seen all the misery and desolation that death can bring, and known the lonesome feeling of being solitary and alone in crowds, and all the agony of separation in grief and poverty, when we most needed comfort and support from each other, can you wonder that I look upon this as a place of such delicious quiet and rest, that with you beside me, I have nothing to wish for or regret? There was a time, and not long since, when all the comforts of our old home did come back upon me, I own, very often, oftener than you would think perhaps, but I affected to care nothing for them, in the hope that you would so be brought to regret them the less. I was not insensible, indeed. I might have felt happier if I had been. Dear mamma, apostrophe said Kate, in great agitation, I know no difference between this home, and that in which we were all, so happy for so many years, except that the kindest and gentlest heart, that ever ached on earth, has passed in peace to heaven. Apostrophe, Kate my dear, Kate, apostrophe cried Mrs. Nickleby, folding her in her arms. I have so often thought, apostrophe sobbed Kate, of all his kind words of the last time he looked into my little room, as he passed upstairs to bed, and said, God bless you, darling. There was a paleness in his face, mamma the broken heart I know it was I little thought, so then apostrophe, a gush of tears came to her relief, and Kate laid her head upon her mother's breast, and wept like a little child. It is an exquisite and beautiful thing in our nature, that when the heart is touched, and softened by some tranquil happiness or affectionate feeling, the memory of the dead comes over it most powerfully and irresistibly. It would almost seem as though our better thoughts and sympathies were charms, in virtue of which the soul is enabled to hold some vague and mysterious intercourse with the spirits of those whom we dearly loved in life. Alas! How often and how long may those patient angels hover above us, watching for the spell which is so seldom uttered, and so soon forgotten. Poor Mrs. Nickleby, accustomed to give ready utterance to whatever came uppermost in her mind, had never conceived the possibility of her daughter's dwelling upon these thoughts in secret, the more especially as no hard trial or querulous reproach had ever drawn them from her. But now, when the happiness of all that Nicholas had just told them, and of their new and peaceful life, brought these recollections so strongly upon Kate, that she could not suppress them, Mrs. Nickleby began to have a glimmering, that she had been rather thoughtless now and then, and was conscious of something like self-reproach as she embraced her daughter, and yielded to the emotions which such a conversation naturally awakened. There was a mighty bustle that night, and a vast quantity of preparation for the expected visitor, and a very large nosegay was brought from a gardener's hard by, and cut up into a number of very small ones, with which Mrs. Nickleby would have garnished the little sitting room, in a style that certainly could not have failed to attract anybody's attention, if Kate had not offered to spare her the trouble, and arranged them in the prettiest and neatest manner possible. If the cottage ever looked pretty, it must have been on such a bright and sunshiny day as the next day was. But Smike's pride in the garden, or Mrs. Nickleby's in the condition of the furniture, or Kate's in everything, was nothing to the pride with which Nicholas looked at Kate herself. And surely the costliest mansion in all England might have found in her beautiful face and graceful form its most exquisite and peerless ornament. About 6 o'clock in the afternoon, Mrs. Nickleby was thrown into a great flutter of spirits by the long-expected knock at the door, nor was this flutter at all composed by the audible tread of two pair of boots in the passage, which Mrs. Nickleby augured, in a breathless state, must be the two Mr. Cheerables. Apostrophe as it certainly was, though not the two Mrs. Nickleby expected, because it was Mr. Charles Cheerable, and his nephew, Mr. Frank, who made a thousand apologies for his intrusion, which Mrs. Nickleby, having teaspoons enough, and to spare for all, most graciously received. Nor did the appearance of this unexpected visitor occasion the least embarrassment, save in Kate, and that only to the extent of a blush or two at first. For the old gentleman was so kind and cordial, and the young gentleman imitated him in this respect so well, that the usual stiffness and formality of a first meeting showed no signs of appearing, and Kate really more than once detected herself in the very act of wondering when it was going to begin. At the tea table there was plenty of conversation on a great variety of subjects, nor were there wanting jocose matters of discussion, such as they were, for young Mr. Cheerable's recent stay in Germany happening to be alluded to, old Mr. Cheerable informed the company that the aforesaid young Mr. Cheerable was suspected to have fallen deeply in love with the daughter of a certain German burgomaster. This accusation young Mr. Cheerable most indignantly repelled, upon which Mrs. Nickleby slyly remarked that she suspected, from the very warmth of the denial, there must be something in it. Young Mr. Cheerable then earnestly entreated old Mr. Cheerable to confess that it was all a jest, which old Mr. Cheerable at last did, young Mr. Cheerable being so much in earnest about it, that as Mrs. Nickleby said many thousand times afterwards in recalling the scene he quite colored, apostrophe which he rightly considered a memorable circumstance, and one worthy of remark, young men not being as a class remarkable for modesty or self-denial, especially when there is a lady in the case, when, if they color at all, it is rather their practice to color the story, and not themselves. After tea there was a walk in the garden, and the evening being very fine they strolled out at the garden gate into some lanes and by roads, and sauntered up and down until it grew quite dark. The time seemed to pass very quickly with all the party. Kate went first, leaning upon her brother's arm, and talking with him, and Mr. Frank Cheerable, and Mrs. Nickleby and the elder gentleman followed at a short distance. The kindness of the good merchant, his interest in the welfare of Nicholas, and his admiration of Kate, so operating upon the good lady's feelings, that the usual current of her speech was confined within very narrow and circumscribed limits. Smike, who, if he had ever been an object of interest in his life, had been one, that day, accompanied them, joining sometimes one group and sometimes the other, as Brother Charles, laying his hand upon his shoulder, bade him walk with him, or Nicholas, looking smilingly round, beckoned him to come, and talk with the old friend who understood him best, and who could win a smile into his careworn face when none else could. Pride is one of the seven deadly sins, but it cannot be the pride of a mother in her children, for that is a compound of two cardinal virtues, faith and hope. This was the pride which swelled Mrs. Nickleby's heart that night, and this it was which left upon her face, glistening in the light when they returned home, traces of the most grateful tears she had ever shed. There was a quiet mirth about the little supper, which harmonized exactly with this tone of feeling, and at length the two gentlemen took their leave. There was one circumstance in the leave-taking which occasioned a vast deal of smiling and pleasantry, and that was, that Mr. Frank Cheerable offered his hand to Kate twice over, quite forgetting that he had bade her adieu already. This was held by the elder Mr. Cheerable to be a convincing proof that he was Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.